podcast is just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind. I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind.
Yeah.
And welcome back to another edition of the Change My Mind podcast.
I won't change my mind because I don't have to, because I'm an American.
Yes, you are. And I'm Wesley Sykes. And through the other side of the ether is the King Niruis. To my kingfish, it's Mr. Nicholas J. Eskfryer, Ocean Master for Hire.
You did me real dirty today.
I didn't pick up until I saw some of your notes in there. Yeah, maybe that was more of a slight than I thought there. I love Dolph Lundgren. I thought he was great, but that's...
Oh, wow.
We'll get into that a little bit.
There. Your guy Kingfish, though, that's John Rhys Davies, right? That's the voiceover.
I think that's...
The crab.
Martin Short.
The crab?
Yeah.
That's Martin Short?
That's what the cast and crew says, which was very surprising to me.
That doesn't sound right. That's not okay. I'm gonna look that up.
I could be way off there, but maybe I copied it wrong. But yeah, okay. we'll get to the bottom of it nonetheless. Speaking of bottoms, this week we're gonna be reviewing the last installment of the DC Extended Universe. Remember that? That's Aquaman 2 or Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, starring Jason Momoa. But before that, Nick, you have an intro question for me today.
Yeah, because I'm just sitting here thinking about this and the movie. Obviously, there's a lot of water involved in Aquaman. Mm-hmm, and I'm curious, Wes, how long do you think you can tread water for?
See, I was hoping this was going to stem from some like argument with your baseball friends or something like that. You know, like I thought that's where it was coming from. So not as exciting the background information on there. But a great question nonetheless. I would like to think like around the 10-minute mark.
Really?
I think that's a long time.
Yeah,
I think it also depends on why I'm treading water.
Yeah, I mean...
Like, am I doing it, like, my life depends on it, or am I doing it to fulfill a bet with you, you know?
I think it's to fulfill a bet with me right now. Not life dependent on it, like, there's going to be adrenaline pumping. I can see why anybody would be able to do it for a longer period. But I mean, just, like, if you were like, right now... I got to go in and I'm just going to go for as long as I can. How long do you think you can go for?
I think 10 minutes. I think that would be my benchmark.
Dude, you'd crush me. I don't think I could get, I don't think I could think, get,
but I don't really know. I could just be pulling that out of my ass. So
as I was thinking about, this is kind of like that Mac versus Wild, like, you know, Mac's just speaking out of his ass all the time about any animal that he can go toe to toe with. And for this, it's just like, I'm not a particularly good swimmer. I mean, I can swim, but I've just never really, I don't know. I'm just not, I don't think I'm good at it. And then like, I was thinking like a minute, maybe like two. I don't know, man. I feel like I'm going to be gassed by the end of that.
Yeah, no, it is a unassuming workout, right? Because like you feel like you're just kind of floating, but you have to be kicking and moving your arms all the time there. I think that could be way overselling my athletic ability there. Or my lung capacity for that matter. But
if we ever do a DSG Olympics, we need to include this in there.
Yeah, that's a great one. I think I'm doing a whole bunch of like stupid tasks like that would be a lot of fun, actually.
I feel like you're talking about like legs and arms, like your shoulders, like your rotator cuff's going to be like the swimmers are machines. Like water polo, like athletes, like players, they're the ideal like athlete look, but your abs are going to be on fire too. I feel like there's so many other little muscles too.
Yeah, no, you're right. There's all the ancillary stuff that you're not thinking about. But I did hear, so the reason why I asked for the clarification, like, what am I doing this for? Because I heard about this study with rats. And what they would do is they put rats into, you know, a bin filled with water, mice, whatever, and try to see how long they would tread water before giving up. And they lasted, like, maybe... Again, just a short number, maybe 10 minutes. But then when they pulled them all out just before they were about to drown, and then let them like regain their composure a little bit and then put them back in to that same water base. And they ended up treading water for like 2 hours because they had hope. Because they kept thinking that, like, oh, we got taken out the last time, so let me just keep treading water, hoping that a hand's going to come down and take us out.
Wow. Wow.
So it's like, you know, the power, the will of the mind.
Yeah, 100%. Wow, damn. That's
I thought that was pretty interesting.
That's impressive. That's insane. Yeah. But, I mean, and when you asked that question before about, like, is it life and death or is it just a bet? It's like, that, 100% makes a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. There, that's
doing it right now. Like
qualifier.
Like if we're about to die, it's like, well, maybe we have a chance if we tread water. Like I'm also trying to figure out if I can float in some capacity too. So mm-hmm. you know, all the different things that you try.
You might be a little bit more buoyant in salt water in the ocean, although then you got to worry about everything underneath you too.
We're not even going there because if you're worried about what's underneath you, then you're better off just trying to float as opposed to treading water. Isn't that the whole thing? Like if you're
Yeah, I mean, I imagine they can see way better than you think anyway. But yeah, I would imagine thrashing around would draw more attention than like just laying on your back doing the dead man's float.
Yeah, now we're getting into – we don't need to get – we're going to talk shark stuff, I guess, somewhat today, right?
We got a little bit of shark action in here for sure. No king shark, though, in this DC extended universe.
That's
a little disappointing. This seems like an opportunity for a crossover there.
Could have easily thrown him in the mix, and instead we got another Black Manta.
Yes, we did. But what we do have for you before all that is another comic book minute from ours truly, Mr. Eskfryer. Damn it, that sucked.
Ah, a superb choice.
It can't all be home runs. So this week, big one for Marvel. We got Wolverine issue 45 out this week. And then on top of that from Benjamin Percy, we got Ghost Rider Final Vengeance issue 1.
Mm.
That's why this one's so huge is, again, Benjamin Percy writing this. He's been doing a great job with Ghost Rider in general, specifically with Johnny Blaze. And we've obviously seen other people take on the mantle of Ghost Rider over the years. Danny Reyes, most notably, I think, outside of Johnny Blaze. Of course, saw him on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but then, of course, in the mm-hmm. comics. Anyways, right now it looks like Johnny Blaze is losing that mantle again. And part of the reason why I'm so excited about this, I did get to read this already, and I thought it was a great first issue. But part of the reason why I'm so excited about this is Benjamin Percy did such a good job writing Johnny Blaze, and we've talked to him about it on TLDR. Like, he loves the character. So for him to be the person that's ushering in this new Ghost Rider, I have the ultimate faith that he's going to get it right. It's not just and I have no, like, Danny Ketch, I read some recent stuff and that wasn't particularly great. I got no issues with Robbie Reyes, but just anytime you're doing that, where you're bringing in a new individual to take on a mantle, it's always like, how's this going to work out? But
sure,
first issue right away, promising start. Joe and I do have someone we expect that's going to get the mantle that was prevalent in Percy's run, which would be great. But this first issue, it looks like it's going in a different direction, but we'll see. Still really cool either way. From Image, we got No One issue 8, which is one of my favorite comics going on right now. The One Hand issue 2. And Transformers issue 6, which is from Skybound, who prints through Image. And that's been the most shocking comic probably since the start of last year. Just it came out of nowhere, changed publishers, and Joe and I have been absolutely loving it. And I am not a Transformers guy by and large. And then AWA, we got the first issue of Little Black Book. We actually talked to the creators of that series. That's out on Wednesday, but you can listen to the interview right after you're done listening to Wes and I. We'll also be doing What's New this week. We're got other stuff cooking in the background. Anytime we're doing What's New, you know that means we're trying to get a little something extra for you guys. But that is it for the Comic Book Minute this week, Wes.
So for the Little Black Book interview, will Doc and you be opening up your Little Black Books and maybe sharing some stories about some exes?
I wouldn't reveal anything in my Little Black Book if I had a Little Black Book. And if I had a Little Black Book, I wouldn't tell you that I have a Little Black Book.
Oh, interesting. That's you have one then.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Blink. Oh, there we go. Okay. That's why it's a visual podcast, folks. You got to head over to YouTube to get on the inside of that there. But without further ado, let's get into our main topic. That's Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, an exit survey. Nick, what is the synopsis of the sequel?
Black Manta seeks revenge on Aquaman for his father's death. Wielding the Black Trident's power, he becomes a formidable foe. To defend Atlantis, Aquaman forges an alliance with his imprisoned brother. They must protect the kingdom. You didn't write this, did you?
No, this was straight from IMDb. So anytime you get a four-sentence synopsis, that's going beyond the elevator pitch, right? That's it's doing some heavy lifting there.
Yeah, that was not good at all. I like Wes, you're better than this if you wrote this. You've written a good one before for us, and that was...
No, it was AI. It was AI done.
You know what? Huh. You know what I would actually be interested in the future? Obviously, time permitting, because you're doing a lot in terms of putting these things together. But I would actually be curious if you wrote a synopsis, and then we included their synopsis, and then I have to pick. And we could flip it around, too. I could do it sometimes, too.
Oh, no. I like this idea a lot. And what we should also do is a ChatGPT synopsis and see which one is real, which one is the AI, and which one I came up with.
Okay, so we'll start alternating on this back and forth then, and see who can guess.
That'll be fun. I like that a lot. That's a great idea. This movie... was directed by James Wan, starring Jason Momoa as Arthur Curry / Aquaman. We have Patrick Wilson as Orm, which I was kind of confused because Momoa kept referring to him as Loki a couple times. I don't know if you picked up on that.
What did he call him, Loki?
I thought just in passing, like take it easy, Loki, or something like that. But I may have missed that. I saw this movie over four sittings before bed. So bear with me here. But that is Patrick Wilson as Orm, a.k.a. the former Ocean Master, right? He was an Ocean Master at one point. Mm-hmm. Yahya Abdul-Mateen II as Black Manta. Amber Heard as Mira. Nicole Kidman as Atlanta. Not the city, Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Atlanta.
Atlanta. There we go. I put the emphasis on the wrong syllable. Randall Park as Dr. Shin, Tamora Morrison as Tom, Dolph Lundgren as King Nerouis, Martin Short as Kingfish.
You were correct on that. I checked that. I'm like beside myself. I thought for sure that was John Rhys Davies.
Yeah. So, hey, you know, he's got some range there, Martin Short, you know. Janny Zhao as Stingray, Palu Asbake as Kordax, and India Moore as Karshan. I don't know who those last two are, but.
Yeah, there was a little shout out. I think Kordax was the big bad in all of this, I think. And then
the ghost captain, the ghost pirate.
Yeah, and then Karshan, I'm not sure on that. But anyways, box office and critics reception. This brought in $434 million worldwide, $124 million domestic, and $27.6 million in its domestic opening weekend, a 5.6 out of 10 on IMDb. Then we got this massive split on Rotten Tomatoes, 34-81 split. Honestly, Wes, I kind of get it. And then a 3.1 out of 5 on Google's reviews with 70% of Google users liking this movie.
All right, for score and tweet length reviews, I'll lead us off here. Give this a 70 out of 100. Despite leaning into the cheesiness, which I enjoyed, Aquaman The Lost Kingdom falls flat due to oversaturation and CGI and poor dialogue. Just really killed me. And ultimately, it just means nothing to me overall. I still haven't finished the first one. And this one, like I said, took me four sittings to get through. So
that's crazy.
Kind of dragged my ass through this.
Yeah, that's crazy that I forgot that you hadn't like finished the first one. I thought for sure that we'd reviewed this, and then I kept trying to find it. I was like, I guess not.
I don't think so. I don't think we did, because I've tried to go back to watch Aquaman in its entirety. I can just never get through the full thing.
I will say, I don't want to get ahead of myself on any of our questions, but I gave this a 75 out of 100. I felt very comfortable. And that was between this and a 76 going back and forth until the last minute. This movie further proves how Jason Momoa makes everything he's in better. Doesn't really do much new, but it's a fun time.
All right. Let's get into the exit survey questions. Was this better than Aquaman?
Yeah, this is, I almost got ahead of myself. So, yes, I think now, look at, like, I had a fun time with the original Aquaman, but if you had to say which one are you more likely to go back and watch, it would 100% be this one. I just felt like Momoa, like, I think Patrick Wilson was a lot more enjoyable. I mean, I get, like, he's supposed to be in this movie, but it was just, like, the buddy cop portion of it, I could get behind a lot more. So I had a fun time with that.
Yeah, right. It's not the origin story of Aquaman, which can be a little formulaic, especially for comic book movies. But that said, I still haven't finished Aquaman. So I guess by default, it's this one. Yeah. I wouldn't really go back I'm not in a rush to watch either of these again. And leaning with the inconsequentiality, no? Mm-hmm. Given how inconsequential this movie is, it's not helping it.
There you go.
How about a surprise exit survey question? What do you think of Jason Momoa as a leading man?
I think he's an awesome leading man. I think that he,
really?
I think he has versatility to go and be a goof like he is here. And then, as I mentioned, I watched.
I think he's always kind of a goof. He's either a goof or a badass, right? I mean, that's like kind of his two.
Yep, and that's fine. Like, I don't mind him having two. Like look at Mark Wahlberg, right? Like, what is he? Like, he's viewed as a leading man, right?
Yeah, he has
been for a while. So, I mean, I know he's not. He's lost his fastball probably, but
still. Yeah, he's not high on my list of leading men. But yeah, no, I'll accept that for sure.
Yeah, so he has those two at least. I do think he can't just go and do every movie. He's not like, Killian Murphy or
right. Yeah. There are different levels to it for sure, but he can do, I guess, is he a leading action hero?
If he's in it, I'm interested.
Mm-hmm. So that's it. He's not putting me over the top to go see a movie. Like, I didn't go see what was the most recent Fast and Furious? Fast 10, Fast 11.
That's right. I forgot he was
in there. That didn't get me to go see the Fast movies. He's fine. He seems especially in this movie, to chew up the scenery. He's having fun at least, which is what more than a lot of people who worked on the DCEU can say. He seemed to actually enjoy this role. But he's not a huge leading man. He's not going to put my ass in the seat,
Yeah,
like
he's
Tom
not
Cruise.
He's not a showstopper. But he's like, if you don't have him in this movie, and if you have Patrick Wilson as your Aquaman, which I think like traditionally, like from an appearance, you would think that might be
sure
who you would go with, mm-hmm. and he can be like uptight at times. This movie's awful. Like, this is just
100%. You're right. Yeah.
So that's my big thing. I would love to. I mean, this has been a thing for a long while. I'm not the first one to say it, but I would love to see Momoa take on the personality of Lobo, because it's very similar to what he actually is and what he's done with Aquaman. And it's why he's made Aquaman like, he doesn't really suck when Momoa plays him.
Well, and he's been a little cryptic, but kind of dropping hints about that. I think he met with James Gunn and the DC heads. I don't know who's it, David Zaslav. I forget who the head of the DC is, but at any point, talking about like his future with Aquaman, how he still wanted to do the role, but he's a DC guy through and through. He was saying this in some interview, and the interviewer was like, there's rumors going about you playing a different character. And he's like, I think I'm going to be in DC for a while. I'm a DC guy. So like, he didn't come out right and say it.
Nice.
And then he's also had like Instagram posts about working on something for DC that's been a passion project. And he's previously said how much he loved the Lobo character and everything.
Oh,
so
there,
like,
you go.
If you kind of piece all the little breadcrumbs together, you can probably make a nice sandwich out of that.
He like... just it, like, even with his like scream and everything that I'm thinking about from Aquaman, like he, like all of what he does,
it's kind of more like a yeehaw, it's like a cowboy yell. Yeah.
And like, it's, Lobo is an intergalactic bounty hunter who mm-hmm. rides a space bike everywhere he goes. And he refers to himself as the main man. And like, with like certain roles, like we've been very fortunate to see a lot of like actors cast into certain roles that it's just like, it fits so perfectly. Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man mm-hmm. and Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. Ryan Reynolds. Like those ones, it's just like, it makes perfect sense. They take on the role so well. And it's just a next level fit, where like Fassbender as Magneto, I thought was a great fit. But I'd say like, if you're looking at it compared to, Downey Jr. or Ryan Reynolds,
it's in that B tier. Yeah.
It's like, yeah. And to say B is like, is crazy in a way to me, but
yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
those are just like, and I feel like him as Lobo could be on now, that level.
Is so maybe I'm kind of answering the question. Maybe you already answered it, but is Lobo a, like an eccentric character, kind of like Aquaman is in these movies?
Yeah, honestly, like it feels like he's playing a like a Lobolized version of Aquaman. Like he's not,
okay.
He's not, like, I know there are some people who like Aquaman out there. I know my brother's read some Aquaman stuff. I've never cared about Aquaman. I'm in the majority on that front.
Yeah, but I would think so. Yeah.
Momoa plays him. It's like, okay, this isn't the Aquaman that I'm familiar with. Like, there's like a little bit of fun going on here. This could work. So you take take what he's done here and then take off like the safety bars, whatever it is.
Yeah, guardrails. Yeah,
guardrails. Thank you. Take the guardrails off and then like throw in like bombs everywhere and you have Lobo.
Okay, because my immediate thought when you're describing Lobo is he kind of feels like a wrestling character. Momoa does kind of have that like wrestling kind of personality persona there. But my other question is I don't know much about this guy, how charismatic he is or eccentric he is, but Roman Reigns looks like someone who could kind of play that role. Might have to thicken up his hair a little bit, you know, get on the Troy Polamalu plan. Mm-hmm. But he kind of looks like the part there.
From a pure look standpoint, yeah. Outside of that, I know nothing about his acting capability. So like, yeah, maybe. But if Momoa was trying to stick around, I also don't know where else you're putting him.
Exactly. This is like tailor made for him, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, not knowing Roman Reigns, I don't know what other capabilities he brings to the table.
Yeah, same here. I just know that he can maybe kind of look the part, but even then, it's not better than what Momoa would bring, even on like an aesthetic level. Should we be surprised that Aquaman is the most successful DC franchise?
Yes.
Barring the team up stuff.
Okay. I was confused because like how is that possible?
Yeah, no. It's putting aside Justice League, Batman versus Superman.
Okay. Even then, that's still kind of stunning. I mean, I know Man of Steel came out a long while before or a significant amount of time before the first Aquaman, but man, that's crazy.
Because not many movies got a sequel. You know, if you want to, I guess you could roll in Batman versus Superman into Man of Steel.
That's fair. Okay. Then I guess
you could, then it would probably be Man of Steel, but Aquaman just edges out Wonder Woman and, with the Wonder Woman 84 coming out, which was a flop, but it was also a day and day release. During COVID, you know, that was I think that launched HBO Max. That was like the first movie on Christmas.
Yeah, that was big. That was actually that might have been the first new movie that Lauren and I saw together, and it was, you know, I remember like, ooh, yeah, that was,
yeah, it was a little tough there. And I was actually excited about that after not being so high on the original Wonder Woman, so I was a little disappointed there. But you know, like considering that no other solo movie really got a sequel or anything like that, Shazam, Wonder Woman and Aquaman really the only ones.
Yeah, when you start, so on the surface it's ridiculous,
it feels crazy, yeah, because it's still, when you, the first one made $1 billion,
the first one did,
yeah, I think, wow. Got damn close, yeah.
So when you start looking at what went on with all these other ones, like between the Justice League and all of its issues, and then the pandemic, and then that impacted Wonder Woman. And then also Wonder Woman wasn't good. The second one wasn't good. And then everything that went on with the second Shazam, and even just Shazam as like a name recognition character, as much as like people loved the first one, it's like, he's still not like this big, like the staying power is not going to be there. Like, honestly, it's crazy to sound, but like say that, but like Aquaman. When you start looking at the factors, it makes sense, but it is on the surface shocking.
When you start peeling back the layers of that old onion there, you know, it makes more sense there. I agree with you. All right, let's get into the movie itself. Was there a most rewatchable scene? And if so, what was it?
So I enjoyed the rescuing of Orm. So that was in like the desert and everything. And then
kind of in the desert. It was more like on the beach.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it was a little too close to the water.
Yeah. I'm just remembering how like when they like started walking like after they kind of won the fight, and then they saw this massive horde, and they're like, yeah, I'm gonna get going. But the other one was the final fight with Manta, and I know like there was quite a bit, I could tell there was some CGI, but what
some,
the,
yeah.
the trident fighting, like something that I again never
that
really
was kind of cool
about. But I liked that a lot. That was specifically I really enjoyed. I didn't even care. Like, yeah, the CGI wasn't top notch, but for DCEU, it was like, okay, I've seen this before. So that, like that, that quality. So I was okay with it.
Yeah. I was struggling to come out with something that really stood out to me that I enjoyed, that wasn't laughably bad or anything like that. So I this is one of the few times I'm drawing a blank.
Mm, yeah. I can't remember last time we did an action movie and you didn't have something for this.
Yeah. Cause again, I thought the CGI was just so oversat, or like even the background, and I get it. It's tough. You're underwater. Like how do you convey that? So you're kind of, your hands are kind of tied in a sense, but it was too much for me. All right, we'll move on then. What will age the best from this movie?
Jason Momoa making something out of nothing. I stand by that. Like, he just, like, this is a character that, for this to be as successful as it's been, yes, there are certain things that had to go wrong elsewhere, but you don't do it without Momoa.
They did go wrong.
Yeah, they did. So I think Juan deserves some credit in all that as well, just making it simple, making it fun, and giving Momoa the room to just like do what he does, because both of these plots have been very simple, not mind-blowing, but they've been, made it really easy for Momoa to shine. Be like, hey, you know what? Aquaman doesn't suck. Really, it's just Momoa, but you know, some, you know, kids seeing this aren't going to know the difference. The use of music in this, I thought there was two songs specifically that got used: Born to Be Wild right off the rip, and then Spirit in the Sky, actually got used twice, and I was like kind of stunned. Like it was like almost like a reprise or whatever the second time.
Yeah. I'm trying to think about it. I just have like no recollection of this movie. This is going to be tough for the exit survey.
There were some other songs I think utilized, but those really stood out because I was just know them so well. But for me, it's like, okay, like don't just, we're dicking around here. Like we're just having a good time. Let Momoa kind of do some Trident stuff. Everybody else is going to be serious, but like,
he's
just having some fun. So like those were the first two that really jumped out. I got some others, but what do you got?
Well, this might, I have this both in what aged the best and what aged the worst. Daddy Aquaman, the first 10 or 15 minutes with the voiceover work, kind of catching you up on everything that's happened. This is full on cheesy. If you get through this point, you know, the movie gets a little bit better, but I can understand people turning it off in the first 10 to 15 minutes. Again, I thought it was so cheesy, so corny that it actually like turned the corner for me and became funny. But then as a young father, you know, I can kind of relate to some of the things as well. This brings up, I have a bunch of questions, and this will get into a little bit more on what age the worst, regarding how he splits the time between land and sea.
That is a very legitimate question, and I think that is something we should try to break down. But real quick, in terms of the cheese that we're getting in those first 10 to 15 minutes, it's happening fast when he says this, but he specifically says in his narration, we're like, some people think I stink. And I was like, oh, like, you know, like, okay, like, I get it. Like, we're right away.
Self-awareness, yeah.
Between that and Born to Be Wild playing off the rip, it's like, okay, like, we're just dicking around here.
How about, and you mentioned this a little bit already too, pivoting from whatever they had originally planned for this movie to warp this into a buddy cop film, I think is a great salvaging of, you know, what was disastrous on set production period, right? Because you have all the stuff with Amber Heard, you have DC folding, you have reshoots, you have pushbacks on dates, right? This movie was supposed to come out before The Flash. I believe The Flash was supposed to be the end to the DCEU, which actually would have been like somewhat of a fitting ending, because you bring back a lot of these like DC characters and everything.
Yeah.
Where this is just kind of going out with a fizzle, you know, this and Blue Beetle.
Yeah, it's a weird one to go out on. Blue Beetle's not for sure out, right? That one's
it could be, it could not be, but you know, who really knows? Everything that I've been reading from James Gunn about, like, because they were talking about Peacemaker, and Peacemaker season 2 is going to be officially canon for James Gunn's DC, but portions of Peacemaker are, and like I saw him responding to someone who was like asking for clarification on that on, I don't know, his Instagram, his Twitter. And he's like, some things happen in the universe and some things don't. And I'm like, what the fuck are we doing here? Like this.
I mean, like,
it's like the Daredevil thing, you know, like the Netflix stuff is like kind of in it, but it's not all a canon. And it's like, all right.
This is one of those things where I don't know why he's addressing that. Like, just address it through the show, like have in like just
You're muddying the water. Like, you're making it harder for yourself.
Yeah. Like, if you don't, and I don't care if they don't want to be clear in the show, but like, address it there and say what he just said here and just make it a, like, make it a joke within the show. And I'm sure they will now, but it's just, I don't know. It's just, yeah, it's very strange, but you are right that I think if you ended with the Flash and then had Blue Beetle, you'd still be fine because that gives room for that.
And they were kind of like close to each other too, right? In release dates.
Yeah, I think so.
Not this far apart.
Right. But this, like, this should have come before the Flash. He doesn't need to, like, from a story standpoint, but it would have been a lot better. But I forgot there was, like, I know the Amber Heard stuff, obviously, but, like, just the reshoots and everything, I forgot there were so many issues. It's actually kind of shocking how this was.
And apparently Amber Heard had issues with Jason Momoa. I think she, like, it came out through, like, conversations with her therapist that she, like, accused Momoa of being antagonizing on set, because that was, you know, as the trial with Depp was kind of all finishing out.
Oh, yeah.
And she accused Momoa of, like, dressing up like Depp, but they both kind of have, like, a bohemian kind of crazy, eclectic style. So, like, I, you know, who knows? What the truth was behind that. He also does kind of seem like a jerk prankster type, but it may be more in like a funny, like, friendly way, but maybe that could be taken the wrong way.
I feel like he doesn't care. So I feel like he doesn't care what he wants to do. Like, he's that kind of, that sounds like another mess involved.
Yes. And again, that whole relationship comes back up in our next category. But I do love Patrick Wilson. I agree with you. I thought he kind of took a little bit off and it was a little bit more fun to play with. If you're Jason Momoa there, I thought they played off each other really well. And I think Patrick Wilson kind of lends himself to being the straight man, and Momoa obviously, you know, chews up the scenery and kind of plays that crazy character pretty well. Although the brotherly dynamic here, maybe you could speak to this a little bit more, but it feels like Patrick Wilson Orm was the older brother.
Because he was more responsible?
More responsible, care. Like, yeah, he's like on the straight. He's like the one that everyone trained to kind of take on the throne. So it's like, you know, that's kind of like the first son type thing. Momoa kind of goes off. He's like not really doing anything. You know, it comes back. I don't know. That feels like a classic younger brother role for Aquaman.
So
I'm sure that's not the case in the comics.
I feel like I honestly can't speak heavily to how they are there. And again, like, Momoa is just so different than what I do know.
Sure.
From the comics.
Yeah.
But like, personally, just looking at it from what it is, Momoa was basically an only child. He was an only child his whole life. And while Patrick Wilson was an only child, he also knew he had a brother, and he had this whole reason to grow up hating this brother. So, like, he had to be better than him, like he says in the movie. So, like, their dynamic actually made kind of perfect sense to me. You have basically an only child and then a younger brother who knows he has to be better than his older brother and can't take any, like, can't take a breath.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Patrick Wilson was given a Orm was given off big brother vibes there to me, though. But did love their relationship. I thought the technology was cool. To your point about seeing the Trident fight, you know, that's something you don't see in comic book movies. I thought that was pretty cool. The octopus submarines that Black Manta uses, very cool to explore the ocean floor and Atlantis and everything. Thought those were really cool. Black Manta's suit is really cool as well. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, no, there are definitely some cool things in here. One other thing too that I just want to throw in here, I agree with you on the team up between Momoa and Patrick Wilson, but the other thing too, for what's gonna age the best, that cockroach joke was great.
Yeah,
like, and the way they call it back in the mid credit scene too was just like, damn, like it was great. And he just never tells them, doesn't come clean on it, just that's it.
What I'll give you though, that moment right there where Momoa gets Orm to eat the cockroach, that is big brother, little brother energy.
Yes.
So that, to your point there, absolutely. Anything else that we want to mention for what age the best?
I think that pretty much covers it.
I also really like the octopus or the troglodyte or whatever it was. That he's going to pop up a little bit later.
Yeah. Yeah. He was good in his little spots.
Okay, this is the fun part here. What will age the worst from this movie?
Dolph Lundgren's performance. I'm like kind of surprised that you liked him in this. I just feel like maybe this is just Dolph Lundgren being Dolph Lundgren, and maybe I just need to let that go, I guess. But it's just like, he was just so clunky.
Well, where this kind of borrows and gets some of its comedic, energy aura from is that it's like an 80s cheesy movie in and of itself. And Dolph Lundgren kind of represents that 80s cheesy actor. So, like, from that standpoint, I think it kind of hits on an almost like a meta performance that he's like, everyone knows that he's clunky. He knows he's clunky, but he's given the lines anyway.
Gotcha. Okay. I mean, I guess I can see that then, like if you're looking at it from that lens. But if you're just looking at it from like straight up, I just don't think he's good. Like, it's just uncomfortable. Like, I was like, wow, like this is bad. Like, I was like, what are you doing, dude? Like,
but amidst everyone else was so bad in this too. Like, he didn't jump out as so much worse than everyone else.
I felt like Patrick Wilson was good. I felt like Momoa was good. You're not a Momoa guy, I guess. And then so that's a big, then that kind of changed things, because I think like Nicole Kidman was like fine, whatever.
Like, Dad's what is she fine, doing in whatever. This movie, you know? I know she was in the first one, but
they're just whatever. And then like Amber Heard's like just like barely has any lines, so you can't really like say how she did in it.
I wonder again with that relationship, was something centered more around them? And they're like, all right, we'll bring Patrick Wilson in now because we can't have her being, in the forefront given all that negative publicity. So it felt like they kind of like edited around a lot of her stuff.
Maybe they did, because she did. She had like two pretty big moments where like when he gets saved in that first fight with Black Manta, and then again later with Black Manta, like Mera's coming in and helping save the day.
But it's she's on her own. It feels like she filmed all her stuff separately, and they were able to like you don't really see them together all that much. Aquaman and Mera.
Yeah, she's very much underutilized, and I mean there's probably the Momoa side of it and just the PR side of it, because like both her and Depp were going through.
Yeah, she didn't really look like she cared too much of this from what I could gather. She just kind of seemed to be going through the motions, almost like a Dakota Johnson-esque performance.
Who they again caught strays in the Oscars. But number one for me, like when I was writing this down, like there's no question who gets the nod here for what's going to age the worst from this. But the next one for me, the random slow motion moments that we get. And it was to the point where I was like, and that actually plays into your 80s cheesy 80s movie. Like I will grant you that. But I was like, is something wrong with my screen right now? Like, am I like something lagging?
Glitching out.
Have it. I think we only have it three times, but it was very much like, what are you guys doing? So you have Arthur's reaction to Junior being taken. Like once he yells, like there's like a slow motion and then fade out to black. Mm-hmm. Then you have Ocean Master when he saves Dolph Lundgren. As he goes to do that, that was the one where I was really like, is this me? Or is that the movie?
And he kind of gives a little smile, right? Like, you think he's going away. He's like, I'm going to let this guy die. And then he just kind of disappears around the stones.
Yeah, and like that, like, and then then you have the slow motion thing. It's like, okay, like that, like most of the cheese I'm fine with. Even the smile, it's like, okay, like you're just trying to okey-doke him, whatever. But that was strange. And then the last slow motion one was when Arthur takes the evil trident from his brother at the end, when they have that whole weird, like, glowy CGI thing, which was kind of like, I got what they were doing there, but like the visually, it was kind of odd.
And it's like the devil on the shoulder for each one, kind of like speaking to him.
And I don't hate the idea, but I feel like that the way they executed it didn't work out. But either way, when he's like Orm, let go, when he finally takes it from him again, it's that like weird slow motion. It's like, this isn't 1982. Why are you doing that?
But again, maybe that's all what how it was intended to be.
I mean it must it was a choice. It's just like there's other things that are done well visually here, I think, and I just don't get why Juan wanted that. But and then the other two were the big bad, like just kind of how that was handled in the end. It was just kind of like, oh, quickly done, all right, we're out of here, you know, nice and easy. And then Patrick Wilson's monologue at the end, not his problem on delivery. Like, I didn't think it was poorly said or anything. We're not talking about like Madam Web situation here. It is like the way that was written was just like, this couldn't be more forced.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like a lot of the dialogue was forced in this there. And also on the big bad, this is another thing I feel like studios have been doing with superhero movies, is that the bad guy gets possessed. So it somehow saves the morality of the bad guy and puts it all on this like evil demon spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. That's a little lame.
Yeah, I'm all for possession stories, but like this ain't it.
No, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's got to be done right, you know, like what's the Russell Crowe movie? Exorcist? The Pope's Exorcist.
Bingo.
Yeah. A couple of things I got, we already mentioned already, the Daddy Aquaman scene, first 10, very cringy, but it almost turns that corner. The CGI blue screen usage, again, kind of got their hands tied there, but didn't really work for me.
The last one when he's doing the speech was the one that was like, where I was like, you're out in daylight. Like, water, I'll grant you some, like, this is tough.
Yeah.
When they're out, when he's giving a speech, like the green screen behind him, like when it's the New York Bay or wherever the hell they were, it's like,
Yeah.
What is that?
No, not very good. And then also them, whenever they would talk, like all the hair, like you could tell the hair in the ocean, like when it's supposed to be floating, just looked off to me. It was distracting to me. Kind of took me out of it. How about Black Manta saying, I'm going to go kill me a dead mermaid?
Wait, he said that?
Yeah, that's when he was attacking Mira early on in one of their first scuffles there. And he's like, I'm going to kill me a dead mermaid. And then he grabs his evil trident and tries to kill her.
Are they going for the Michael Keaton, I'll kill you dead? Is that what
I guess. I don't know. That's but not nearly as much cachet as Michael Keaton has, you know, to pull off that line.
No.
We touched on the chemistry between Amber Heard and Jason Momoa as a husband wife. Like I remember thinking this in the original one that they were brother and sister. It never came off to me that they would be romantically involved. Hmm. Also, that's Orm's ex-lover, wife, right?
Yeah.
A little weird. Weird there. And I think Black Manta makes a note of that there at some point. Aquaman's invisibility suit, it covers his whole head, even though the suit only goes up to his neck.
Yeah, that's
kind of lazy there, right?
Ooh.
It should just be a floating head working his way through the desert there.
That's an interesting point. Yeah.
Is Mira a deadbeat mom? Because this goes into like how much time is being spent on land and sea. And we see Momoa's father, when he's not throwing back Guinness pints, that he's doing a lot of the caring for the child.
Mm.
But you don't really see, like, so if they're both up hanging out with Junior, you know, up at Maine in the lighthouse, then who's protecting the oceans if they're like presumably one and two?
I think the larger point is interesting, because it's like, yeah, like, and I get that they're, it's part of the whole story. It's like, well, how do you balance the two out? You know, and that's the whole thing with Arthur Curry, bringing land and sea together, blah, blah, blah. But
he doesn't really balance it out. He just has his dad take care of him.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, like, it's like, he's not like splitting time that, or, you know, that's shown. He's like, no, I'm not going to care about the kid when I have to deal with stuff in the ocean.
Well, and then you have the ocean people saying he's not there enough. He's not spending enough time with them. So it's like, and I get it. Like you're, that's the whole thing in the story, but it was just, yeah, I don't know. I think like, this is when you start talking about like the way this was plotted out. Like it's just where it kind of gets like disjointed, because you start going in this different direction. And I guess it's like all about Arthur proving himself as a leader. And that's where his brother's monologue comes from. But I didn't get, I don't know, like it just, the way the fight was going and everything, it just didn't feel like it was that. It's like, we're just trying to stop this dude, and that's it. Like, that's all we care about. So, kind of got lost.
How about the father not dying? He should have died.
Yeah. That was...
There's no other reason to keep him alive other than just having a happy ending.
Most of us aren't walking away from Trident to the gut like that.
Yeah. Definitely not a mere human.
Yeah.
A land dweller.
Yeah.
And no Willem Dafoe. Yeah, I was questioning why an actress like Nicole Kidman wouldn't come back.
I'm pretty sure he died in the last movie.
Okay, see, that's could be where my disconnect was with never finishing Aquaman.
Yeah, it's been a minute since I last watched, but did I think?
But listen, if the father's not dying, then you can bring back Willem Dafoe somehow.
I'm checking here to see to make sure that I'm right. I actually don't remember.
But Nicole Kidman also like is too big of an actress to be in this movie here. Like, I hope she's not in any financial trouble. Between this and like telling us to go to the movies all the time, you know, in those preview commercials, whenever you go see a movie, you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's AMC. I think it's the AMC commercials they do. It makes me worried for her. I don't know.
Oh, scheduling.
She's my tall queen.
Scheduling. So maybe I don't remember.
Conflict?
Yeah.
Okay.
I legitimately watched the first Aquaman one time.
Again, so we're proving that this is the better of the two Aquaman.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else about Age the Worst?
No, it's aging this review because I'm forgetting what happened in the first one.
This guy's going to come up in a couple of categories here, but Randall Park's Dr. Shin, like Black Manta should have just killed his ass. Like, why is he alive?
Yeah.
That's bad leadership.
Yeah, his whole bit seemed a little bit forced.
Yeah, he's like way too involved in this. Like, he shouldn't be at the end, like holding a gun.
Is he supposed to be the guy? That's the one guy you have with, like, you're Black Manta, and you already kind of don't like this guy's been weird and he knows way too much and whatever. Mm-hmm. That's the only guy you're going to have with you. I think he had like one other person that was going with him and they just died, but like, that's it.
And he had Stingray, you know, he got Stingray kind of manning the ship there.
Yeah, well,
she doesn't really offer a whole lot there. She's just sitting in that big room, that big concrete room the whole time.
Yeah, but it's just, I agree that, like, the fact that he stuck it out.
He also takes over narration for a certain point, which I thought was kind of odd. He's, like, starting, it's like him speaking into his recorder as he's taking notes, but that like, a certain part of the narration. Which is weird. We don't need him and Arthur both narrating stuff for us, you know?
This is true.
Who had the best performance by a side character?
I think this may be our only thing we fight about. Storm the Seahorse was my
guy. Pretty strong steed.
Yeah, he was there right whenever you needed him, too. And he looks cool. He's effective. Like, he's loyal. All the things that you want in your noble steed.
See, I think if you're looking to infiltrate, and if you need kind of like a do-it-all type of sidekick, like an R2-D2, but in real life form, it's the octopus, or the troglodyte, whatever they kept calling it. But it's an octopus.
Cephalopod, I think, is what he referred
to. Cephalopod, thank you. Yes.
Which is,
yes.
I believe, is like the octopus, like squids and octopus are both cephalopods, I think.
Okay, so it's like, I can't. I'm not even going to think of the animal kingdom
it's like
there. But
dogs
yeah.
and wolves.
Yeah.
Like they're both canine. Like that kind of.
There we go. Gotcha. Yeah. I thought that was great. It blends in. I don't know how it survives in the desert, but that's.
Yeah, that's neither here nor there. But I will say, when Orm is like, you brought him? Like, and he was like, what the fuck? That's your backup? That was pretty good.
But, you know, he can get into hard places. He can camouflage. You know, he can do a lot of things there. So that's a good Swiss Army knife to have.
So weird how octopus can do that. Octopi, whatever.
Yeah. And they're smart. They're very intelligent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're terrifying. Like, we talk about sharks, how they scare the shit out of me. Like, you run into an octopus underwater, man. Whew.
Yeah, the difference between I think a shark and an octopus is like an alcoholic versus a serial killer. Like, one is just like operating through its spine off purely emotion in the shark, but the octopus is like gonna think of a way to kill you and then get away with it. Yeah, that's how I would describe it. But Kingfish also gets a shout out. Martin Short, I was pleasantly surprised to find that out, but. You know, he keeps losing his claw, and it'll grow back in about a year or so. But that was a nice recurring bit.
I can't believe it's him. I thought for sure it was John Rhys Davies. I'm like beside myself. What the fuck?
Who lost the movie, Nick?
Dolph Lundgren, because he was by far the worst. But then the other one's probably Black Manta, because he's like he's the bridesmaid in both movies. Like, he's just like, he's there and he's doing shit, but like. you know, by himself, he just can't really fully hang with Aquaman. And I think this is part of
Aquaman. Wait, literally, he stopped hanging, actually. He gave up.
So he just, this is true. But he just, I as a villain, it's just like, he's not bringing a whole hell of a lot to the table. And it's tough, you know, for him to compete against, like, you know, this dude who just has such a next level advantage over him. He's just, you know, a tough villain to, you know, utilize fully. So he's like, he wasn't bad in this movie, but just like, again, and he's not even, it's not really him, it's the other guy.
He's possessed again. And again, he's just trying to avenge the death of his father at the end of the day, but he's willing to like destroy the whole earth to do that. I know he's possessed, but you know, he's willing to allow the possession to happen. I'm with you. Tough villain, although great suit. We'll stand behind that. Randall Park's character, Dr. Shin, I thought lost the movie. He didn't even want to be there. I felt like at one point in time, like he was actually making a cry out to the audience and saying to us, I don't want to be here anymore. And it wasn't just a line that he was reading as a character. He, Randall Park, was saying to us, to the audience, get me out of here.
Wait, that's Randall Park. I thought that was John Krasinski.
Oh, there you go. There it is. Bah, 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 bah.
Hey, we're doing cheese, right? So I just figured. But absolutely. Yeah. He was like, you know, they always have to have these characters, like not always, often have to have characters in superhero movies. Like, this is the one that the audience can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious. I would love to get a poll of everybody who sees comic book movies, superhero movies, and is like, how much do you actually care about those characters?
Yeah, it's like Biscuits in Echo, right? Like that type of character as well, who's like kind of funny and goofy, but it's like, you know, kind of the lovable character without any powers who helps out.
And there are some who absolutely work. Like obviously that's the guy from Ant-Man. Why am I blanking on his name right now?
Oh yeah, I know Michael.
Michael Pena. Luis. Yes. Like he outstanding. Like he's the best
guy in the chair, Spider-Man.
Yep, 100% Ned. Like they're mm-hmm. great. Some of them are awesome, but like Michael Pena is like very much a bit, and then Ned has like a significant role. But then you have like Randall Park's character here. He's great. Randall Park's great mm-hmm. In Ant-Man, but in this,
yes.
Like, we're just, why do we need that character? Like why does he need to? If he didn't survive, then I feel like his performance has a little more weight. But other than that, it's like.
Yeah, he should have sacrificed himself to try to thwart Black Manta's plans in some way.
Yeah, I mean,
and that would have been an honorable death.
He put himself in harm's way a few times, but he mm-hmm. just walked away from it.
Just like
Aquaman's dad.
Yeah, and the scientist shtick, who's like, "I'm just doing it for science." Like, I didn't know he was. I didn't know he was an evil guy.
Yeah, you know what?
All right, come on.
They missed the real opportunity in this movie that I just realized. If you're going to be cheesy and you're going to make like mess around with everything, they should have taken Arthur's dad, who is the same actor that plays Boba Fett, and when they were healing him, they should have put him in a Bacta tank type thing as a wink and a nod to the bullshit they did with Boba Fett over in Disney.
Oh, there we go.
Damn it.
Okay. We could have done that there. Also, Amber Heard, Mira, again, it was obvious they tried to not feature her as prominently as she was probably billed when this movie was first starting out.
Yep.
And then she just felt stiff. Again, I kind of got the Dakota Johnson vibe that she was just going through the motions, didn't want to be there. Obviously dealing with some other shit while all this was going on. Literally, she pooped the bed, so she was dealing with that.
That's
right. She doesn't really age all that well. Although she is very attractive. I'll give her that. She's a very beautiful woman, so you know, it's not all that bad for her. Who lost the movie? Who won the movie, Nick?
Momoa. I mean, he's the only one who comes to me. He comes out where it's like I would still love to see him in the mix. I had a fun time, and the reason I had a fun time is because of Momoa. Like again, not a groundbreaking movie, but he does a good job, and he makes it like a comfortable 75.
I'm going to go with his younger brother, Patrick Wilson Orme, in this. I thought he was a delight and played off Momoa's over-the-topness pretty well there, while embracing kind of the cheesiness and taking like a little bit more of a lighter approach than the original. But my real answer is you, Nick. You're the big winner of this.
Why?
Because you know, we were talking about doing this movie in theaters back around Christmas time. And then once it became on video on demand, we were talking about maybe paying $25 to review this movie. And now we watch this movie for free. And I couldn't thank you enough that we waited to do that, because that would have been $25, $30, $40, whatever it was to go see it in theaters. Definitely $25 on demand there. So thank you for keeping my pockets lined.
Yeah, I think that we're the big winners then, because we saved a nice chunk of change because we just use our little HBO there. But
And once again, you're the winner. Thank you for lending me your HBO there. This is the first. This is a CMM first here.
This is. I don't know. I don't like. I'm not sure. I didn't have a victory speech plan. Maybe I should just talk about Field of Dreams for a minute.
There we go. There, yeah. What do my eyes see? Right, isn't that what not Dustin Hoffman, Al Pacino said at the Best Picture?
I just thought about how I actually missed that part. I'm sorry, you might be right. I was just thinking about what's his face, Mulaney, how he not only did he do the Field of Dreams bit, but he also takes the shot at Madame Web, and I'm just
thinking,
what if we did a table reading of Madame Web? Like, would it be more entertaining than
probably? I think so. I think that would be fun. I think Mulvaney should get John Mulaney, Mulvaney. I think he should get the hosting gig.
I'd be down for that. Yeah, I actually watch
some fresh blood. How many times can you have Kimmel and Fallon do it? You know,
I don't watch any
Chris Rock. I feel like has done a couple. No, I don't really care, but you know, you would get more of the clips like we got then. Yeah, you know, no one really cares about Jimmy Kimmel's opening monologue.
I think Mulaney's actually a really good call. Like he could he's someone who could do it and could actually probably do it for a good while. Like
he's got good enough cachet credit among the Hollywood's elites there, where he can poke fun at them and not be and do it in like a playful, inviting way.
Right, because he's been through his own shit, so like he has that like respect. Where I don't know if Kimmel has. I mean, I know nothing about that, but Mulaney's very much forward about it.
He did dress in full blackface to impersonate Carl Malone on The Man Show.
Oh.
It's actually a good impression though, to give him some credit.
Once you said I was like, oh wait, what is this? But now I actually I do remember like that.
So he's been through it himself. But that's it though. We made it through Aquaman the Lost Kingdom. I gave it a 70, Nick gave it a 75. That's a CMM aggregate score of 72.5.
Nice.
72.5. Now viewing on Max, HBO Max, whatever you want to call it. So if you want to put a bow on the DCEU, go watch that. And then actually, just as a little, you know, precursor to next week's episode, we're going to be giving our definitive DCMMEU rankings.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Very excited for this. Like there's a few movies that we haven't done on our show, like that predate CMM.
Yeah, I'm sure Man of Steel is one of them. Batman Superman, I feel like maybe.
Mm-hmm, probably. Yeah, we did some rewatches in there, but I am excited to go through this. And this is, we will be the definitive like punctuation mark on the DCEU, not
exactly
us.
Now I can't guarantee, I can't tell you if this is going to be a funeral or a celebration of life, but either way, we're putting some bodies in the ground.
It's going to be something. That's for sure. It will be a podcast episode.
Yes. Yeah, it will be a podcast. You are 100% right there. Now it's time for our last segment of this podcast. It's the Discharge Depot. Get your ticket, ladies and gentlemen.
Choo-choo, bitches.
What'd you do this weekend, Nick?
Finally watched Oppenheimer. Took me freaking long enough.
What'd you think?
Self-proclaimed Cillian Murphy fan. And dude, I loved what he did. Like, I loved I loved Oppenheimer, like the individual. I thought he was fascinating. I loved the experience of like seeing how everybody around him was handling this brilliant mind and just how like, and so many, like, I understand like brilliant people can be like hard to deal with at times, but just how disrespectful they were to him at times as well. I just, I loved the individual. I loved Cillian Murphy's portrayal of him. I just felt like he just brought me in, I was so invested in him. And then in general, the other characters around him, Robert Downey Jr. was amazing. Emily Blunt absolutely. Was great. Yeah. Florence Pugh was like, holy shit. And then just visually, obviously, it was amazing. And just how many friggin', Lauren and I couldn't believe it as we're watching it, how many stars are in this thing, or people who are on the rise too. Mm-hmm. A guy who's on the rise is the guy who's playing Huey in The Boys, and he's I can't remember who.
Jack Quaid.
Quaid, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. Not Russell. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Quaid's Dennis Quaid's kids, and Jack Quaid's
David Dalmatian. Dalmatians in that, yeah.
And that's just and there's plenty of I know that guy. Mm-hmm. Some of the people on the committee that the Great Council, there's people I've seen these people before. And so yep. Well-known.
Yeah. The lawyer, not the prosecutor, but the guy who was doing all the interrogation in the room there. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Whatever you want to call him, but yeah, him. And then, who's the guy that plays Freddie Mercury?
Rami Malek. Yeah.
Right, Rami Malek. Mm-hmm. I started with with Quaid, just to, he's a guy who's on the rise, but you have so many other people that are names. And then he's just kind of an afterthought in this movie. You have Josh Hartnett is in this movie.
Who does a great job in it. Who looks huge, by the way, in comparison to everyone. He looks he's 6'4".
Yep. Kenneth Branagh's in it. And whoever Cillian Murphy's teacher was at the beginning of it, who gets referred to later, he's a guy I've seen in some shit before too. I can't
picture him.
I don't know his name, but it's just so many of them. It was just, I was blown away.
Definitely deserving of the awards. I mentioned this when I watched it maybe a month ago around this time, and saying just Christopher Nolan does such a good job of taking complex, maybe even boring topics and then making them very compelling and interesting, whether that's through the cast that he puts together, because he does have a lot of people that he likes to work with. Cillian Murphy's one of them. Tom Hardy's another, right? He kind of brings them all in here. I thought that was great. And the other one that I love about this movie is at the end when Strauss is talking to his political aide, and they bring up John F. Kennedy as one of the people who voted against him. Mm-hmm. And it's an introduction to, I mentioned this, it's reminded me of Robin. At the end of The Dark Knight Rises, where they're it's some young Democrat out of Massachusetts trying to make a name for himself. What's the name? John Kennedy. John F. Kennedy. And then this look of astonishment comes on Robert Downey Jr.'s face. It's you should go by your middle name. It's kind of funny though.
Robin. Yeah, no, that's fair. That definitely had that energy. But that guy who was in there with Strauss the whole time.
He's great too.
That's a guy I've seen in shit before too. And mm-hmm. then the guy who there's a guy who's always in Nolan movies too. That was just like you said, a ton of people. Mind blowing how many were in there, and it was just so damn good. Everything a bit about it. I didn't worry about giving it a grade, but that's obviously it winning Best Picture is the least shocking thing in the world.
Yeah, I had less of a difficult time getting through that movie, even though it was 3 hours in one sitting, than I did with Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. So, take that for what it's worth. I went to my first meat raffle over the weekend. The Born Braves were doing this to raise some funds for a pitching machine for the team. Have you ever been? Have you ever heard of a meat raffle?
No. What I was going to ask, what the hell's that?
It's exactly what it sounds. It might take place at an AmVets or something like that, some sort of lodge. We're at a Weary Travelers Club. Maybe it's at your Freemasons Lodge or something like that. But you pretty much get a sponsor to donate meat. Nice cuts of beef, rib roast, rack of ribs, hot dogs, hamburgers, different cuts of steaks. And then you buy, raffle tickets, and then you put them in, and you put your tickets into the cut of beef that you want into that specific bucket, and they raffle them off. Hmm. It's a good time. My father-in-law won a whole bunch of sausages and hot dogs and hamburgers for a summer cookout this year.
Nice.
Cool. But this is my first time going to one. And it was the name always sounded unappealing to me, a meat raffle. I don't know.
Yeah, sounds odd.
It's awesome. It's it's a very blue collar thing. I felt good. There was a lot of flannel in this place, you know.
Ah,
but the real thing I wanted to mention was Ricky Stenicki, the one half of the Farrelly Brothers, R-rated raunchy comedy starring John Cena. You have Zach.
Oh yeah,
Andrew Santino, who's been on Dave. You know, he's the manager on Dave there. Big Red. Oh, yeah. That movie, saw that, it was laugh out loud funny. You know, it's not like a world beater. I wouldn't give this movie an A, but this is just a solid R-rated comedy, you know? And because it makes me laugh, I can look over so many other things. Like what we were talking about with True Detective. Like, if you just give me a good murder mystery, I can overlook all the other, like a lot of the other faults, because you cashed in on what you were selling me the first time, right? Or what the movie or show was billed as. This movie comes in, you get a lot of R-rated, raunchy, you know, jokes and everything like that. John Cena is awesome. He's like a full-on comedic actor in my eyes. I think everyone plays the straight man to him in this, and he doesn't shy away from it. Chews up the scenery in the best way possible. But like most movies, comedic movies, like, you have to have a story. So you got to put the laughs to the side and then just kind of like rush through the ending. So like, you know, if you're into picking apart comedy movies, maybe that's your thing, you know, maybe that's where your dock points. But if the movie makes me laugh, I liked it. We don't really get too many R-rated comedies. I like this much more than No Hard Feelings with Jennifer Lawrence that came out I think it was last summer.
I think so.
Highly recommend this. Also, it takes place in Providence.
Oh, no kidding.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Yes, sir.
It looked promising when I saw the trailer. I don't get why this is on Prime. I mean,
I don't know. Maybe it's just they don't think enough people will come out to a comedy movie like that. I don't know. But it's big actors, you know. You feel like that could draw an audience.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Cena just doesn't. I don't know. Like what we talk about,
and Efron though, Zac Efron.
Yeah, I mean, Cena's
that's a name.
Cena's like winning me over. I mean, I'm interested in checking this out. But just when we talk about, like, you know, who's putting asses in the seats, like, how many actors actually like do that now? Like, that's the thing with Chalamet and Cillian Murphy, I think with those two performances, it was like, are we seeing like somewhat of a transformation here?
Well, I think more than the actors of those movies, and Cillian Murphy's great. And Chalamet was really good in Dune too. I think that's the director, Denis Villeneuve, and Christopher Nolan. I think that's what's bringing the people out there more.
They are.
And obviously they're helping as leading men in it. But I think that's like the big shift there. You know, new Greta Gerwig film. You know, even as big of a cast as Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling and everyone else. But that's there's certain directors who are kind of like, oh, I got to go see that film.
I agree with that 100%. What I mean is that I started hearing with Murphy's performance, and then now I thought I heard it with Chalamet too. Like, maybe you finally have those actors that can do that again. You're right. It's definitely like we've seen how like Greta Gerwig has that power, and then same goes with and Villeneuve may seem to have it now too. I think like just Dune in general has.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think his whole Celebrate the Man's whole catalog, you know.
Yeah, but Nolan definitely is one of those, like, that's where it's at.
But
right
there's
now.
No, but yeah, there's no real new Tom Cruise, new Brad Pitt, right? Someone who's like, you're gonna go see the new Brad Pitt movie, you know?
I would love it if
new Leo.
I would love it if Murphy's that new guy, because he had the hit show of Peaky Blinders, and now he has Oppenheimer, where he goes and turns all these heads. Like, is that it? Is it him? But I don't know. I can't believe it wasn't Robert Downey Jr. Because like, but he just went in some like what was that movie he did? Doolittle. That was
Doolittle, and Sherlock Holmes sequel wasn't great. You know, another one. Maybe I'm just thinking of Doolittle there, but
I didn't see. I don't know if I saw the Sherlock Holmes sequel, but I definitely saw the original and enjoyed.
No, I enjoyed both of them. It's just I don't think it was the second one was as a smashing of a success as the first one. The first one was really good. I enjoyed it.
It's kind of surprising that he doesn't need to. Like, I mean, he just, like, you can say what you want, like, about, like, him not maybe doing it elsewhere, but it's like, he just did so much as Tony Stark. It's like, what does it fucking matter?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And now he can kind of do these, like, supporting roles for a great film and great director sort of thing, where he doesn't have to be the leading man. And,
God, he was so good in as Strauss. Like, that was amazing. What a despicable character.
We have a little bit of breaking news here, Nick. I would like to get your opinion on it. We are in the Discharge Depot. We can do this. The Patriots just announced the signing of quarterback Jacoby Brissett.
Really?
Yeah, what does it say?
Oh, wow.
Okay. Oh, no, they just said plan to sign him. Yep, agrees to join his sixth team in 9 seasons.
There, yeah, because so. It's like the non-tampering period right now. Mm-hmm, I said it like that for a while back. Like, it was going to be Brissett who was the guy here, not Garoppolo.
There we go. So that take has finally come to roost here.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, it's, you know, pick, what are you picking between when it comes to these two?
Like, yeah, on. I mean, I think he's a great leader, good locker room guy, which could be a change of pace, apparently. You know, I'm not sure how well liked Mac Jones was or how much of a leader he or Zappy were. So, you know, I think he brings that leadership quality. I think Bill Parcells loved that about him coming out of NC State. I think that was a little bit of a thing coming out there at the time. He was doing like scouting or just like doing TV stuff. And he's like, I love Jacoby Brissett.
Parcells, like, it was after, you know, I was like confused, like, did you slip there?
No. I think there's something out there about that. Yeah.
Okay.
You can give it a googs if you're interested. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's pretty interesting. They're just bringing back everyone.
I don't get it. I don't know. I mean, like, I hope that there aren't people out there who are actually like excited for next year. It's like, I mean, if you know. They're going to, I don't know.
No, I think if they were to, I think if they draft a quarterback, that's interesting. That's definitely brings some intrigue on the season for good, bad, or indifference there.
Sure.
But if they went, even if they went Justin Fields, Marvin Harrison, or Justin Fields, Trey Down, Roma Dunze, or whatever his name is, or you get one of those top flight receivers. I think that is also kind of intriguing, but
it
seems like they're doing this over a multi-year period. It feels like, at least from day one of free agency.
I just feel like it's got to, why wouldn't it be Harrison? Like, if you don't, unless you like think this one of those quarterbacks is him 100%. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think you, ideally you're not picking this high for some time, you know,
You think so? I think they are.
I mean, hopefully that's if you are in the organization, that's what you kind of have to be approaching, right? Like, otherwise everyone's going to be losing their jobs and there's going to be new people doing the picks and everything, right? So I think if you hope you don't have to pick as high as number 3 again.
I think if you're,
so you take the swing at the quarterback when you can, because if you see getting, you know, the 4th, 5th rated quarterback in that, like, I don't know, 8 to 15 range. How often do those work out in comparison to the big ones?
I guess my thing is, if you go and think we have to be better next year and not get here next year, obviously you don't want to be like miserable, but at the same time, why rush it versus take your time and get like the best piece that's available there? And if it's like, if you have a top flight, like, wide receiver who's like, this guy's can't miss, and then you have like, okay, I have a good quarterback. Well, we get the top flight receiver, try and develop him as we can with Jacoby Brissett or whoever the hell you want to try out there. And then next year, we see if we can get a guy who's on the same level, or we draft a guy who's like good, and then you like not great. And then you still have Marvin Harrison. You have like other, and then you have Ramondre Stevenson. Like, now you have talent that there. Then you just, you get back to where you are probably again next year. Don't rush it. Don't rush it for the sake of not being there. Like, that's my thing. Don't sacrifice long-term for success for short-term success.
Yeah, I think you take the swing at the quarterback. I think, okay, unless you trade down. You trade back and get tipped. That's kind of like
if they trade down and Marvin Harrison's still there, like, I mean, just, I just don't know how you continue going forward as a Patriots fan. Like, I just don't know how
people I think Jacoby Brissett brings a certain level of like play at quarterback where you can actually work the ball downfield a little bit more than what Zappy and Mac Jones did. I think on paper, I'm not sure how effective that can be, but I feel like he's a little bit more of a gunslinger.
He's
a little bit of a bigger body.
He might be better than those two. I mean, he's better. Probably, I love Zappy, but he's probably better than Zappy. And obviously Mac, where he devolved to. When he was the Pro Bowl quarterback, I mean, not that he was great, but just giving him a little bit because at least he did that. But yeah, no, it's
Belichick did the same thing to Jones as he did Brissett, you know. Although I think Brissett had a broken finger that game. It was like the fourth game of the Brady suspension. Houston Texans, I think it was like a 27-0 game. He barely passed. He just ran the ball the whole time.
Yes, but yeah, he was dealing with like an injury and had to, I think, like, so, that, yeah. Yeah, that was, yeah, 100%. But yeah, Brissett's better than he was when he was here in New England. I mean, like, he's at least evolved as a player in some capacity. But I don't know. I mean, like, I think it's very interesting just to see him come back. But
yeah.
Yeah, no, I just have no, yeah, no, sorry. I don't have high hopes either.
I just thought it was interesting. Everyone was talking about that. I think the big takeaway is that, you know, Gerard Mayo said he's got cash to burn. And they have apparently $100 million in cap space, depending on who you read. And then they made him go out and be like, no, actually, we're not going to spend all that. We're going to be aggressive, whether that's saving money or spending money. And now it's like, once again, this is the Felger and Maz take here. Bargain bin shopping here, whether it's Antonio Gibson, Jacoby Brissett, whomever, right? Yeah. Now it's like, oh, okay, is that Bill's? You know, was that Bill's philosophy that we gave him so much shit for about not being, not striking while the iron's hot on day one of free agency and waiting for whatever's been picked over to choose from? Or is this a Kraft thing?
I don't know how anybody ever thought it wasn't the latter. Like,
yeah, that's good propaganda. That's good Patriots propaganda there.
Yeah. It's just like, this is the same kind of shit that I'm not saying that Bill was like, but like didn't deserve his criticism. Like, believe me, I'm not out here looking to defend that guy by any stretch, but this is the same kind of shit that happened with Mookie Betts. And then look what happened with Xander Bogaerts.
Yeah.
Then we have what happened with Bill. And then the second Gerard Mayo's in there, same shit's happening. Mm-hmm. So it's like, again, like I understand like owners, like they're trying to run a business and all this different stuff, but people got to like ask those questions, like, or consider that before it's like, hey, you know, this is the easy guy to go and target. It's like, well, that's the owner would want you to target. Maybe they're part of the problem. You know, mm-hmm. There's a pretty good chance that's the case. And I'm not saying
bottom of the league in cash spending, you know, yeah.
Just, you know, Bill made it work forever, but clearly stuff happened in the end when it came to the quarterback position. How do you not ask if that guy who's known for like when he's getting annoyed or impatient, however you want to put it, for having things to like feeling like getting involved in some capacity or other with what happened with Parcells many moons ago? How do you not ask that question? Is this happening again? Like, how do you just like, we want Bill out. It's like, well, don't be so quick to think that it's just going to like resolve itself that quickly.
No, I'm anti-Kraft here. I've been anti-Kraft since before Belichick was being fired. Like maybe midway through the season here. I'm like starting to get off the Kraft train. Yeah. He kind of had this like Teflon status with Patriot fans, and obviously so he's RKK, wears Air Force Ones, you know, he's kind of personable, he hangs out with Meek Mill, although that's kind of become questionable given the rumors circulating Meek Mill, but yeah, so I think all of that stuff made him kind of like lovable being the old man. But he's a cheap businessman,
and I just,
it's the reason why he's a billionaire.
Is it him? Is it Jonathan? Like, I don't know. Like, I just, you know, it's just, it's so easy. Like,
they're the same person as far as I'm concerned. You know, they're two heads on one snake. Hmm. Is that a phrase?
Two sides of the same coin?
There we go. Yes.
I don't know.
That one should have been more top of mind.
So we're doing Patriots talk next week, and then we're doing DCEU after that.
Yeah, we might run through some combine thoughts here, get some good combine thoughts there. But yeah, next week we're going to be doing a definitive DCMMEU rankings. But nevertheless, it'll be at the same bat time, same bat place. Literally, the DCEU.